You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to the King of All Kings podcast.
J Street Vibes.
Hosted by Kenny Caraway and Jason Jones.
Yeah. What is good? You already know what it is, man. You know the vibes, man. The J Street Vibes. I'm your main man, Kenny Caraway, ESPN 1320, D-Lo and KC co-host. You can hear me every day on ESPN 1320. Got my main man, Jason Jones, with me from The Athletic. Jay, what's good, man?
I'm chilling, man. You know, got my first taste of Kings playoff basketball since I was in my 20s.
Damn, I mean, I ain't even gonna put your age out there, but it's been a minute. It's been a minute.
Yeah. I mean, you just do simple math. I mean, if I was in my 20s, at the worst case scenario, I still got a 3, but I got a 4 in front of that first number. I was out of. I think the last series I remember going to might have been that Dallas Kings one where Nick Van Exel and Steve Nash.
Oh wow, that they played the. The only time Dallas beat him is when Weber got hurt, right?
Yeah, when Weber got hurt, yeah.
Yeah, so it's been
part of that one. Yeah, so yeah, it's been a minute since I've been around. Yeah, because I didn't go to any playoff games during the Artest Bonzi, you know, Sharif era.
Well, we knew this was big time because at the Golden 1 Center, not once but twice, that man Jason Jones was in the building, man. So you know it was big time.
They go say I'm the reason why they lost.
Oh, they lost both games. When you weren't there, they won both games. So, I mean, do with that what you may. Okay. But I will say this. We all know what it is. Kings, for anybody checking in here and not knowing what's going on, I'm not sure why you're listening to this if you don't know what happened in the playoffs. But just in case you are, the Kings lost in 7 games in the first round to the Golden State Warriors. In an epic first-round series. That was a hell of a first-round series, man. And unfortunately, didn't go the King's way. But let's just start there, man. Oh, what a series. What a series. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I know it's not number one because the first one that comes to my mind is Chicago and Boston that one year where they had like 4 overtime games or something like that in the first round. So that was a good one. I remember there was a really good first-round series between the Spurs and the Suns, but this was one of the dopest first-round series I could remember. This was a good one, at least since they've been going to like 7 games and everything.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some interesting, some good first-round. Was it the Spurs played the Clippers 1 year?
Oh, yeah, that was a good one. Yeah, Game 7 was the same day as Mayweather-Pacquiao. I remember that.
Yeah, so, I mean, you've had, yeah. And I just think it's what made this one different is just that the teams were so evenly matched. I mean, this was a real – it was 3-6, but the seeding really wasn't that big of a deal. It's because
more West, like a 4-5 matchup.
Yeah, the West was so, you know, jumbled up. You know, it really was about who was going to – if there was going to be a Game 7, where were you going to play it at? And the series was entertaining. I think, you know, De'Aaron – introduced himself to some people who maybe didn't know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Kings, I mean, it's tough in a way because I think the fact that the Kings hadn't been in the playoffs in so long kind of gives, I won't say it kind of softens the blow, but man, you were up 2-0 and had a game 3 without two of their key players. Mm. If they go up 3-0, this is a whole different – I think this is a whole different discussion.
But, I mean, that is a good point, and I've talked about on the airwaves how – I said back in March, I think I said it on the radio show, I think I might have said it on here. I said once they clinch the playoffs, there is no disappointing ending to the season. The season is a success. And when you're involved and in, you understand the dynamics of the Sacramento Kings, I think that's a very reasonable and logical take. Like, the biggest thing that happened this year, the biggest thing that could happen was breaking that streak. They did that. And I was like, look, they got swept in the first round. A success. They got a taste of the playoffs. They got done with that. But I understand what you're talking about. When you get out of that prism, which, once again, I'm not going back on it. I think that's the right prism for the Kings. This year is a success simply because they broke the streak, 100%. I'm not going back on that. But when you get out of that prism and you look at the series like a regular playoff series, that's a great point, man. They were up 2-0, still had home court. I had an opportunity to get one. I'm not saying win both of the games and be, you know, and sweep, but get one of those games in Golden State to put some real, real pressure on them and make it a 3-1 series. They weren't able to do that. And then they lost game five as well at home and kind of put them behind the eight ball. So, yeah, man, when you look at it like a playoff series, that was tough to not be able to close that out after being up 2-0.
Yeah, and you lose the last two games you lose are at home. You know, you lose your last two at home. During the season, the Kings are always better on the road, which I always thought was weird. Because normally teams are better at home.
Yeah.
You know, but I just think, kind of like De'Aaron said, that, you know, like I said, if you remove the fact they just got in, I mean, obviously that's a big deal. But I think for me, what changed is that you didn't like get in as the eight. You got in as a three. And if the three seed, I mean, if the three seed goes up 2-0, even though obviously the six was not your normal six, I just would have loved to have seen them figure out how to get one of those either game three or game four. But I just look back at game three. I'm like, that was, and I think even Davion said after the game, that was the game to end this. That was the game, you know, and because it was like, because they didn't have Draymond, they figured out that kind of unlocked something for them for three games.
Yeah.
And they went three in a row and they unlocked the whole, well, we can go small. So, I mean, but yeah, you take away just the happiness about being in the playoffs. I mean, I think they're going to spend a few days going, man, if we had did this one game here, I mean, game three and game four are going to haunt them.
Game four was the one. I thought game four, they played well. They played really well, you know, for the majority of that game. That was a game where they played Kings basketball. They put themselves in a position to win that game. And I think it was a 1-point game, maybe with about 3 minutes to go, and maybe even less than that, maybe like 2.5 minutes to go. And they just got like three straight empty possessions.
Yeah.
There and some turnovers. And they got it to one a number of different times in that game and would turn the ball over or, you know, put up a bad shot and could never get over the hump. And then even with all that being said, they had an opportunity, Harrison Barnes right there, to stick it to the man, stick it to the man that is the Golden State Warriors. And
the man who wanted to go to his wedding.
and put them in a tough predicament of being down 3-1. And I remember, you know, being at Sky River Casino and seeing that shot. I thought he hit it. It looked good. It looked like it was going to go down and just back rim. And at that point, you got into a situation where I don't want to say you were at a disadvantage, but you had lost your advantage. It became quite literally an even series again at that point when it was 2-2 going back to Sacramento.
Came best of three, and the team that won game five probably was going to win the series. But that team was going to have two chances to close it out, and that's how it played out. And I think you look at game seven, I you know, if I have a critique or a commentary on that, how do you not just ask Davion on him, you know, is Davion going to stop him? No, you know, but, you know, that was about the easiest 50 I've seen in a long time. And, you know, and sometimes I think you can overthink things. And I just want to see him make stuff work at least, because Clay was not playing well. Wiggins couldn't make a shot. You know, all they were Steph and you know, the second coming of Moses Malone under the glass.
as our producer Jesse would say, Steph Looney and some guys.
That's what it ended up being. And, you know, that, you know, one of those guys is, you know, all time great and carried him. But, you know, I think it's cool that we can sit back and nitpick and say, well, why didn't you do this or why didn't you do that, as opposed to them getting swept, which I never expected to happen. I mean, I think it's good. Like, I even asked Darren after the game, you went 7 with these guys. Now you see just how close, you know, how close it is to getting, to advancing. That this is not some, you didn't, they didn't get any, get smacked around.
Right.
You know, you were, you, you were a game 7 at home away from advancing. I think they can take so much from this experience because of that.
I don't like saying this more times than not, because it kind of sounds like sour grapes. I'm not trying to have that or nothing at all. The Warriors did what they had to do to win that series, and they came through in the clutch moments to win that series. But it really felt like the Kings were the better team. They just didn't have the know-how, and they didn't have the best player in the series. They didn't have Steph Curry.
But, when you get to a game 7, that's what usually comes down to, who has the best player.
Yeah. But is that off base to say that, you know, like I said, not trying to take anything away from the Warriors, but I thought the Kings were the better team. They didn't execute. They didn't take care of business. And once again, you got a guy like Steph Curry, who's a monster out there. But I thought they had the better team. I thought they had to learn some things, though. We talked about postseason experience and all this other stuff. I've kind of poo-pooed it a lot. But, you know, being there felt like they had to learn some things. They had to learn how to win a game 5 and not let your foot off the gas in a game 3 or in a game 7 when you're up at the half, making sure that third quarter stays at your tempo on the way you went. There was just a bunch of different learning experiences. You kind of feel the same way about that?
Yeah, I think if I went man for man, I think overall the Kings have a better roster. Mm. I think they have a more talented team, but – they don't have the experience. And then when you saw that grittiness, time for that, they didn't have that. And some of that just comes with experience, some of its personnel. And I think that's one thing De'Aaron said, you know, it is more physical. And he said, you know, yeah, we didn't shoot as well. Maybe that's because we weren't used to the physicality, and that took our shots from us. You know, and he said, a jumper, taking a shot in game 50 or game 70 or game 20 is not like taking a playoff shot. And I love the fact that he gets that. Because you hear guys say, oh, it's just the playoffs. You know, but, yeah, he said he embraced the physicality. And something about people don't know about De'Aaron. De'Aaron likes a physical game. People look at him and say, oh, he's a smaller guy or he's kind of lean, but like De'Aaron told me one time, he played football in high school. He likes to hit. And so I think they had to learn that. I think, you know, one thing De'Aaron said was Mike Brown had always got on them all year about the little things. It's the little things. It's the little things that, are, you know, and those little, he said they were problems all during the regular season, but now you get to the playoffs and see why those little things matter. Boxing out, you know, boxing out on long, you know, not giving up all those long offensive rebounds, you know, turnovers at the wrong time, you know, forcing a shot at the wrong, you know, those little things you're able to get away with against the Houston Rockets in February come back to get you in the postseason. And you look at the game, I look at game 5 and game 7, the Warriors didn't shoot great. You know, it wasn't like the Warriors were lights out. The Warriors,
game 5, they were lights out. Game 7, they were.
Yeah, you're right. I'm talking about more so game 7. Yeah, game 7. Both teams pretty much were a mirror image in a lot of ways. I mean, neither team could make free throws. But the Warriors beat them at the little things. They got all those off. I mean, you look at the rebounding numbers, they weren't a great disparity. Wasn't like by 20 or anything. But you look at the fact that how many possessions the Warriors bought themselves again. Especially that third quarter. I mean, I'm like, is this Wilt Chamberlain out here? Like, what are we doing here? This man getting everything. You know, so I think there's definitely a lot to be learned. I think I'm curious to see what Sabonis takes from this. Because, I mean, he's taking some heat for how he played.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I said all season that if they faced a team with a big who was physical, that could be a problem. And they just, you know, they ran it. You know, you look at all going into the postseason, there wasn't like a option where I was like, yeah, they're going to be cool against that guy at the five. And they ran into a guy who was just on a mission. I mean, get 320-something rebound games. Mm. You know, like I said, I don't know if that was Dennis Rodman, Ben Wallace, or who. You know, but I mean, I haven't looked at Kevon Looney's numbers for his career. Yeah. I seriously doubt he has many seasons where he averaged like 10 plus boards.
Right.
doubt it. But you know, that's that timeliness. You know, they know when to make the plays, and they know. And you know, there was a game five when Gary Payton II got like two or three putbacks.
Mm-hmm.
That's just understanding the moment and just, you know, wanting it more. And I think the Kings will understand now that teams that advance do all that stuff. The stuff they kind of poo-pooed in the regular season, like, well, you know, we score a lot of points, whatever. You realize you get to this time of year, those points are going to be harder to come by. You might score some points, but it's going to be harder to come by.
Mm.
And you're going to have to get a little, get a little grimy out there, get on the floor more, do that type of stuff. And I think all of that's going to pay dividends for them down the road if they can take that and apply it. And it's tough to start doing it in the playoffs if you haven't been doing it all year or you're not used to doing it. So now that, you know, like De'Aaron said, okay, that I can be physical.
No.
And we can play good defense. I mean, you know, we can actually do it. So they're going to take it.
Good to see, man. I want to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about De'Aaron Fox, man, because he had one hell of a season, one hell of a year, to be honest with you, man. So you wrote something about that. I want to get more into De'Aaron and the season that he had. It's Jason Jones of The Athletic, Kenny Caraway, ESPN 1320. Jay Street Vibes will be right back.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Back here on J Street Vibes, Kenny Caraway, ESPN 1320, D'Lo and KC, Jason Jones of The Athletic. We're here putting a little bit of a bow on the Sacramento Kings season here in the 2022-2023 season after a first-round exit to the defending champion Golden State Warriors. Nothing to hang your head about, though, man. They broke a 16-year drought. They reinvigorated this city, and they made the entire city proud and kind of brought a franchise back to life. So it's I want to say it's all good because you want to win, but it is all good out here in Sacramento. They love this team, and they're hoping this is the beginning of something. One of the things that they're hoping this is the beginning of is multiple all-star, possibly multiple all-NBA De'Aaron Fox, man. What a year he had. Just a breakthrough year in the league. I want to get his numbers specifically up on the season. I think he averaged, I don't even want to think. I want to make sure I have it right here. I'm pulling it up as we speak. But on the season, he averaged 25 points per game to go along with 6 assists, 4 rebounds, 1 steal a night. The first ever NBA Clutch Player of the Year award went to De'Aaron Fox for what he was able to do time and time again in the fourth quarter, the most by the numbers, the most clutch player in the league. And then he had his first playoff appearance and he upped his game in the playoffs. He went from 25 a night to 27.4 to 6 assists a night to 7.7 assists, then even upped his rebounds and steals as well. He was able to do what I think a lot of people were hoping Sabonis would do, and that's take your game up a notch in the postseason. Sabonis obviously wasn't able to do that, but De'Aaron Fox, he more than did that in the playoffs, man. What a year from him, man. He's a guy that, you know, you saw him when he was drafted here in Sacramento. They looked at him like the savior. He was going to bring these guys to the promised land. And like I've said a number of different times, Jason, I know it's not a championship. I know they're not there yet. They've got a lot that they want to accomplish. But damn it, he did it. He did it. He brought him there. He's an all-NBA player. He's an all-star. He broke the streak. He performed in the playoffs. Damn it, he did it.
Yeah, and they finally got him some help. I mean, a lot of times I think we're way too hard on young players about what they have and haven't done and ignore the fact that usually the best players end up in some terrible situations to start their careers. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've known De'Aaron since he got drafted, and I've always said he's one of the smartest young players I've ever, you know, he's very self-aware. Like, understands what he's not good at. You know, you don't have many guys who are 20 will tell you, I'm not really a great leader. I'm not really good at talking to guys and doing that stuff yet. And he understood that he had to get better at it. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, there's definitely an awareness probably of how, you know, people view him. And sometimes you see him, you know, have fun on social media about that. People say stuff about him, but I just saw a different level of, you could kind of feel the maturity in him. Mm. You also forget, we got drafted, was he 18? Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you take all that into account. The fact that he did not come into this season trying, you know, over to, I forgot who got him to gain a bunch of weight last year, but that was just the craziest thing ever.
Last year was all bad. And I don't know if he remember it, but I, after one of his workouts, I talked to him. Because I was hard on Fox at the beginning of the season last year because I was so disappointed in how he started that season and how he came into that season. And there was a lot of other factors going on. He's probably pissed off, like, we're really running this back again. Like, we're really doing this again. There was a lot going on. But I told him, I was like, man, you was at one point, like 25 games in the season, he was averaging like 17 points a game. I was like, well, you're not a 17-point-per-game player. Like, I can't just sit up there and be like, everything's cool. Like, I had to be like, nah, you're better than this. And when I talked to him, he was like, no, you're right. Like, I expect the same thing out of myself. I wasn't handling business. But that was the one time, the first month and a half of the season last year, when I was like, man, I don't know if he's it, man. I don't know if he can get it done. I knew he had the talent, but I didn't know. And, you know,
like, why would a guy whose game is predicated on speed think that gaining weight, you know? But then again, you don't know who he was working with. You know, he could have got some bad advice. Mm-hmm. You know, someone, you know, could have told him that was a thing to do and they were wrong. But yeah, him playing like that made sure that Luke Walton and them guys was going to get up out of there. I mean, they didn't win that without him like that. Because that the way that team was, it was so bereft of talent. Mm-hmm. That if De'Aaron wasn't, and that's what made it tough too. If De'Aaron wasn't special every night, a lot of times those teams couldn't win. Mm. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot to put on him. So you actually put a team around him. And he, you know, and I saw a lot of maturity in his game in terms of getting to that mid range game. I mean, it was lethal. Mm-hmm. Getting to the paint, you know, he's not Steph with the three, but I think he's a much more confident 3-point shooter.
Yeah,
we weren't complaining about him going 5 for 9 on free throws every other night.
Oh man, the free throw thing was that was driving me crazy, and all of a sudden he turned into damn Mark Price at the free throw line this year. I was like, that's what I'm talking about.
I mean, you definitely saw some growth and some improvement, and like, you know, you listen to the way he talked about the game. He had a coach tell me one time, what young players don't get is that being really good in the NBA is hard. It's not easy. Like, the level of work and time and commitment, it's hard. There's a reason why everyone can't be that guy. Because not everyone wants to pay that price. You know, you don't want to cut your vacation short because you got to go work out. Yeah. You don't want to be the guy who's like, hey, I need to get all the guys together to get this work in. And De'Aaron has grown into more of that guy. He wasn't always that guy. You know, there were grumbles amongst the team, like, man, this dude rather work out with his fiance than work out with us. You know, so he wasn't always that guy, but I think he's grown into that role. And it always helps when your GM goes out and gets you another all-star to play with and puts guys around you who fit what you do, as opposed to drafting a bunch of seven-footers.
Do you do you think there's another level that he could reach, or is this about who he is? And I don't even say that like in a negative way. He could be 25-6 for the next 8 years, and that's dope, right? Like, that's really good. I'm not saying it like it's bad, but do you think there's another level that he could reach statistically and just as a basketball player in general?
I don't think he's in his prime yet. I think he can become a better three-point shooter. He'll become a better defender, a more consistent defender. He can be a dominant two-way player. And I think if he becomes a more dominant defender, I think that changes, that flips so much. I mean, I know I even talk about it. We hear the head of the snake, head of the snake, head of the snake. Yo, he's ahead of the snake. But if he flips that on defense as well, and you start seeing him getting all defense votes, and you know, maybe that steal account goes up to two steals a game, two and a half. You know, we know he can block shots. You know, when needed, he can be a rebound. You know, he can rebound. You know, there's areas where he just, even a small uptick takes his game to a different level.
Yeah.
You know, if he's getting, you know, I forgot how many boards he averaged this year, but if that number goes up a little, and that means he's initiating an extra two or three breaks a game, that could be, with the way the guys can shoot the three, that could be extra 9 points. So there's definitely another level. I definitely wouldn't say that he's, you know, I don't think he's in his prime yet. I think he might be a year or two away from it. I mean, like I said, we forget how young he is. What, is he 25 now?
Yeah.
So, I mean.
People think about their prime, they're usually thinking about 27, 28.
Yeah, usually you think about a guy hitting his prime around 27.
Yeah.
You know, that's when the experience coupled with the knowledge all comes together. And now, boom, you're Superman.
Yeah.
And I think this playoff experience and what he'll take from that, and what he'll add to his game and bring to the regular season, I think next year we'll see another leap where he goes from, well, he made the All-Star team, to, well, damn, he is killing this for real. And, you know, that's the guy that we got to get on TV 20 times. That's the guy we're going to, you know, we got to get in, who gets a new big shooter. You know, I think he can get that. I don't think we scratched the surface with Deere.
No, I agree with you. And you talk about this playoff experience that he got. I mean, you were on the biggest stage that the NBA has, you know, at least in the first round, like all ABC and TNT, but three ABC games, everything else on TNT, like not even a sniff of NBA TV. Like you were on that type of platform. You went up against the world champs. You went up and you went head to head for a long time. Obviously, it didn't end up this way, but I think like the first five or six games, him and Steph Curry had like the same amount of, you know, points per game. They both had like 31 and a half or something like that. So you went up against, you know, a psycho like Steph Curry, point for point, damn near, for the much of the series. And they were throwing the kitchen sink at him. It wasn't like, oh, you were matched up with GP2 the whole time. They had GP2, they had Wiggins, they had Clay, they threw Draymond at you. They were throwing everything at you, and you were still able to do your thing. And I say all that to say that can only breed confidence in him moving forward, right? Like, you gotta, if I'm De'Aaron Fox, I'm like, I ain't gonna say I seen it all. I'm sure there's different stuff, but damn, I didn't seen a whole lot. So what am I gonna be worried about Trae Young guarding me in January? Like, nah, I didn't seen it.
It's like single coverage, I'm insulted. All you're gonna do is put a regular one guy on me. Watch this. I think, like I said, it's all there and it's been there, but I think he learned a lot about what it takes to be a high level NBA player. he learned a lot about what it takes to play at that level consistently. I mean, his first 4+ years, 5 years, we saw flashes of it. That's why, you know, he'd win NBA Player of the Week. He'd have a good 5-7 days, and we'd be like, yeah, he was Player of the Week.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd win 3 or they'd win 6 or 7. And then he'd tail off, and the team would suck.
Yeah.
Because he had to do so much just to get Player of the Week. But I think physically he's probably, but he's prepared for that role. Mentally he's prepared for that role. I mean, you're asking a lot of a guy coming out of college to be the savior of a franchise that had been a joke.
Yeah, but he did it. I give him. I mean, I know Sabonis came, Mike Brown, Monty McNair, but this is the guy that was here from the start, and he's produced pretty much the entire time. And I give him the credit. He did it. He's the best player on this team. You know what I mean? I know there was a lot of discussion earlier in the season, and it's no shade to Sabonis even after the playoffs. Sabonis is fine. He's a certified all-star to me, regardless of what happened in these playoffs. But it was never any doubt for me. De'Aaron Fox was the best player. He's the best player.
I think so. What Sabonis did, it allowed him to not have to be the best player over every night.
Mm.
It allowed him to not have to be the best player for 4 quarters every night.
Mm-hmm.
Which helped him. But yeah, I mean, tomorrow who the best player is, that's determined, you know, in the postseason.
Mm.
This is where you become a star. And he was a star. Yeah. And there's no knocking that. There's no denying that.
Yeah.
He was a star. Just flat out star. I can't say it any differently. He was just amazing.
Yeah, man. Shout out to De'Aaron Fox, man. What a season from him. What a ride he took all the Kings fans on. We're going to get out of here, get one more break in. And when I come back, I'm going to ask you a couple pressing questions for next year's Kings team, man, to see what you think, man. Jason Jones of The Athletic, Kenny Caraway of ESPN 1320. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
J Street Vibes back here in ya. I was going to say in your ear, but or air in your airways. It really doesn't matter. You're listening to J Street. One way or another, you're listening to J Street Vibes. Jason Jones of The Athletic, Kenny Caraway of D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320. And, you know, myself and Damian, we talk about this often. This was phenomenal. This was an unbelievable season, an unbelievable year. So many good times. So many good vibes. Everything was awesome, right? They got to the playoffs. We got to see them win at home a couple of times, win a big road game where we'll talk about it later on down the road. I know, you know, other teams talk about championships, all this other stuff. It's the Sacramento Kings. I think Game 6 might have been the biggest win in franchise history. I'm not even going to lie to you. I mean, everything considered, pound for pound, what they had in front of them, what they had to do, Game 6 might have been the best win in franchise history. So we got all that. And we talk about it all the time. Enjoy this. We would tell people during the season, enjoy this. Enjoy what you just experienced as Kings fans. Enjoy what just happened as Kings fans. Because it will never be like this again. Because unlike this year, moving forward, there's going to be this thing called expectations. And if they lose in 7 games in the first round next year, I guarantee you, I'm not going to be as pleasant as I am today. Like we can only feel this one time. It's like everything else in life, your first time, you never forget it, right? There's a lot of people's first time. Everything's awesome right now. This is the last time it will ever be like this. Next year, it's about business and it's about moving forward. So off the top of your head, the very first thing that comes to your mind, what do they need roster-wise to move forward and take another step?
Physicality on the front court. Physicality. I think they need some another rebounder, a guy who can help under there, some length. I just think right now, teams that are big and physical can pose too many problems to them, so they need some more size. I mean, you know, can you find a 7-footer who you can give real minutes to? You know, can you find someone who can play minutes at the four who's not a not a Harrison Barnes? You know, a legit 6'10", 6'11" guy to help you who can, you know, space the floor, still play defense. You know, basically, can you get a Chemezi type player who can get minutes? You know, so, you know, I think that, to me, that's what jumps out.
Keegan can be that? You think Keegan can be that?
I don't know. Maybe Keegan's a three.
See, that's the thing about it. I don't. If you ask me right now, I'd say he's a four. I think they hope that he can be a three. I don't know if he has that type of mobility to be a three. He showed, but there are a lot of times when I looked at him this year and I was like, there's no way he could be a three. He gets abused on the perimeter. And then as the season went along and he stopped, you know, he got through that rookie year and stuff like that, I started to see flashes. I was like, you know, if you get Austin with an NBA, you know, training staff and get his body right and get his foot, I can see it. If I squint really hard, I can see Keegan Murray at the three. So I don't know. I don't know if he – right now I'd say he's a four, but I think they're hoping, and to get what you're talking about, they would probably need him to be a three.
He's got a rebound on a whole lot better. They need that. That's a big area they need help. I think another rebounder would help them defensively and get their offense jump started. So maybe that's just a matter of prioritizing where you put him and whatnot. But as I watched him just get killed on the glass in that second half, I'm like, yeah, they need somebody who can help in that area. And just some some more size on the perimeter. I mean, you can never have too much of it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you can, you know, but to me, if I'm prioritizing things, I'm trying to get me a, you know, he had to be a superstar, but a Jared Vanderbilt type. Maybe you find a, you know, McDaniels type, one of the McDaniels types, you know, where he's not like your traditional bruising four, you know, but he's, like I said, he's got length. He can, you know, he can do things and have some versatility defensively. I just think that's going to be the big area if I'm them, just finding some guys who can help you defensively, you know, 3-and-D type guys.
So here's the deal. Here's the conundrum. If you're bringing in that type of guy, I think you're moving on from Harrison Barnes. Because where's he going to play?
Very possibly, unless you draft that guy.
Yeah.
You know, unless you trade for that guy, you know, but you're going to have, you know, it depends on what you think about Harrison. I mean, based on the minutes that Mike Brown played him in Game 7, those aren't the minutes you give to a guy that you think is pivotal to your season. I mean, biggest.
Would you bring back Harrison? Say Harrison at 3 years, $15 million a year.
That's a very team friendly deal. I mean, I'd have no problem with that.
$17 million a year.
Yeah, that's counting pennies, relatively speaking. At that point,
I agree.
You know, I mean, that wouldn't be a crazy deal. I don't know what other guys around the league are getting. You know,
what if you could get Kuzma on the same deal?
Well, you're not getting Kuzma on the same deal.
You think Kuzma making $20 million a year?
Yeah.
What if you could get, here's a number, there's a guy that I keep thinking about that I really like. What if you could get Cam Johnson on the same type of deal, maybe even cheaper?
I like Cam.
I do too.
Cam's younger. But see, the way the NBA free agency is, a lot of times those guys never actually – is Cam going to be restricted?
Yeah, Cam, I think he's unrestricted. And he said something earlier in like when he got traded – said something when he got traded to Brooklyn a couple of weeks later. He's like, yeah, I'm not really tripping. I'm only going to be here for a couple of weeks. So, so I think he's going to be testing free agency somewhat.
One thing is a lot of times like guys, like that, guys like that will break the bank sometime.
So
I just don't know, you know, what the plan is. It's tough to say because the playoffs are still going on. And you don't know, you know, and so, you know, there's going to be rumors about what's going to happen. And I think Brooklyn is going to be inclined to want to hold on to him just because, you know, they need somebodies. And
they got a bunch of him, John. They got Bridges, Finney Smith. They got a bunch of guys like that.
So, I mean, do you look at a sign and trade with a guy like that? You know,
he's a restricted free agent, by the way.
Yeah, and that makes it tricky. Makes it tricky because generally, I can't think of the last time a guy, well, maybe Bogdanovich was the last guy who was a restricted free agent and his team didn't match. Yeah. I can't think of many guys who don't get matched.
Yeah.
Well, but, you know, you got to get creative. You never know what's out there. I mean, no one saw the Kevin Herter deal coming.
Yeah.
Well, maybe there's a guy out there.
Kelly Oubre?
I've always liked Kelly Oubre.
I do too. I don't know if I like him more than Harrison. I think he'd be cheaper than Harrison, but
there are going to be some options out there, I think. And then you got to kind of see what happens with some of the other teams. I think if Phoenix wants to move on from Ayton, and then now you got multiple teams moving parts around. Maybe they attach themselves to a 3-4 team deal, and that's how they get another guy. You know, what if Minnesota decides to trade Karl Anthony Towns or tries to move Gobert again? Who knows what the Clippers are going to do? A guy like Nick Batum would be good for the Kings.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean –
I want something a little younger. I like the Kelly Oubre, Cam Johnson.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't know. I haven't talked to Monty in a while. I just don't know how much younger, how many more young guys. I mean, they've got a young core. I mean, and that'd be great for the Kicks. Go for it.
There was a time when I would have jumped it. I used to like Dylan Brooks.
That'd be interesting.
He progressed as a player.
The joke in the internet is that the Shanghai Sharks are interested. They said Dylan's phone is getting blown up by unknown numbers in the Philippines. He doesn't realize this is next. Poor Dylan. There's going to be, I think, you know, and when I watch them in the postseason, I think they need, I don't say this to be mean, they need a couple more adults. Maybe a couple of vets who have been around. You look at how the Warriors run when they got 9-9. I'm not comparing the Kings to the Warriors who won champion, but I'm saying you look at their runs. They added guys like a David West, you know, a Sean Livingston who could play a role, but he was an adult.
Yeah.
You know, a Barbosa who's obviously now a Kings assistant, but you know, you look at the good teams that win, they add guys like that. You know, maybe not four of them, but you get one here or there. Last year with the Warriors, they had their guys. But the year before Milwaukee, they've got some adults on the team. The Lakers had some adults on the team. You know, you just keep going back. Toronto had a couple of, they had Kawhi. But they had to, you got to get – I just think they would benefit from, like I said, not necessarily Nick Batum, but got a couple of guys like that, some guys who have been around who can still contribute. Like higher level Dellavedova types, like guys who can actually be in the rotation, like adults who can actually still get on the court and help you.
Yeah, I agree. So, we'll keep our eyes peeled to what's going on this offseason for the Kings. And once again, Jason, man, just a great season. Appreciate you getting back on here with me, man. And we getting back at this J Street Vibes, man. You got a lot you're working on right now, man. What's going on right now, man? What can we be looking for?
Well, I'm supposed to be off this week, but I still got to do some work. But I got some stuff coming up for Mother's Day.
No,
coming up. Working on some more shoe stuff. got a couple of interviews lined up with some big names next week. So I don't want
to
say
Kyrie yesterday at the Golden One Center.
I saw him. I didn't talk to him. I mean,
you talked to Rich Paul. All the stars are out.
Yeah, I talked to Rich. Wow. Yeah, I know Rich for a little bit. You know, remember he had Ben McLemore back in the day.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and Rich got guys.
Did you talk to John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan?
No. I didn't even see them. And
Harrison right behind Kyrie.
Oh, I would have asked them, you know, what you going to do with that quarterback you give up all those picks for?
Chill. Nothing. As you can see, all those rumors and innuendos all weekend were about nothing. They were never trading them. Stop it. Trey Lance is starting week one.
No, he's not, but okay.
Stop it. Stop it.
You don't believe that.
He's starting to be – who else is going to start? It ain't going to be Sam Darnold. It's going to be Trey Lance. Come on, stop playing. If Brock Purdy was healthy, I would start Brock Purdy, but he's not going
to
be healthy.
Brock Purdy's not healthy. I would just love for Sam Darnold to start week one just so I could laugh at all the Niner fans. You know how
it ain't happening. Trey Lance is starting. It's all good.
Trey Lance is starting the year 0-1.
Don't be disrespectful. Really, don't be disrespectful to the young man.
Well, what happened last year? What happened last year when he started?
Okay, yeah, they started 0-1 last year. It ain't happening this year. Well, I don't even know what the schedule is, but it ain't happening.
Like, I don't know who they're playing, but they're going to win. That's okay, you know. Just keep your mans off the internet. They said the man, my mans, look like the Lifetime version of Patrick Mahomes. I'm like, damn.
I mean, he does have to make a decision soon. I can't say that about the young fella. You're going to have to make a decision.
The decision has been made. He has not accepted the decision. He's fighting it like Kareem was in 86. You know, he won't accept what the Lord is doing. The Lord is giving him a sign. I mean, when you're getting an extra large widow's peak lined up, the Lord is focused. Oh,
damn, man, he's too young for that, man. But trust me, I know. I was like 23 when I did mine, man. I was a youngin' too.
I was 42, 47. Blessed. Well, I mean, he could be Derek White, you know.
Oh, well.
That headband covers up.
Man. Come on, what are we doing here, man? That headband ain't fooling nobody, man.
My man got a headband now. It's a towel they just tie in the back. Even LeBron's impressed by that man's headband. LeBron, like, I didn't have one of them. Dang. What is that?
Oh, man.
He went to the presser and got roasted. Oh, Derek White.
Oh, man. But, hey, man, great Kings season. We're going to be here throughout the offseason, man, as we try and see if the Kings can do what they got to do to get back, man. So we'll be here. We'll have a couple additions coming soon. You guys will hear about that a little bit, man, and we'll be up in here. But until then, man, Jason Jones, Kenny Careway, J Street Vibes, y'all be good. Peace.